According to our next guest, the Great Recession has thrown huge economic challenges at almost all Americans, save the super affluent few. And we are only now beginning, she says, to reckon upon the human toll that it is taking. She writes about the subject in her new book, Down the Up Escalator, which is a dispatch from the front lines of the struggle to keep our heads above water and maybe even someday get ahead. It is a pleasure to welcome author Barbara Garson to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
What brought you to this particular subject?
Life. 40 years of watching people get more nervous and anxious about their economic conditions. And the challenge of I guess to me, the big challenge was to write about it. I am a playwright, to write about it in a way that dramatized it and make you really feel the tensions that people are suffering.
You are a playwright, you are a journalist, and so to take this approach to look at it, and ultimately the subtitle of the book, How the 99% Live, and that is a question that you wanted to answer, I assume, or is it something that you knew and you wanted to explore?
That's a very interesting point. When you do this kind of writing, if you know everything before you start, you have a book that your readers can tell is canned. So you have to look, and I interview many more people than I talk to. I let you know which ones seem really typical and which ones are interestingly not typical. And you partly know how you think before you start, but you have to be open to what you might see that will surprise you. And if you write it right, if you have very long interviews, but if you contract them in a way, your readers will follow your surprise. They'll understand. They'll do it with you. They'll understand when you saw what you expected and when you saw what you didn't expect.
Do you think there are commonalities in the stories? It seems in reading the book that people are all over the board as to how they have been affected by the economic downturn.
There, you know, when I write this book, my publisher expected a quickie on the recession, and that meant a book about housing defaults and schemes to write bad mortgages and stuff like that. And that is in the book. You will understand those derivatives from some ex-bankers who also lost their jobs in the recession. But I knew that we had 40 years of wages stagnating or going down. I knew that before I started. And so what I found among almost all people I was talking to is that their conditions or their parents' conditions had become more insecure. So, for instance, banks weren't lending money to people who couldn't really afford houses because they preferred to make bad loans. I don't think they really chose bad loans over good loans. Although they made sure they could get those bad loans off their books, they were making loans because, you know, productivity had gone up 99% in this country over 40 years. Wages stayed stagnant and declined. So the people couldn't lend money to businesses to expand because businesses weren't expanding. If they can't sell to Americans, they don't expand. So it's as if they got a great idea. I know what. Instead of paying you enough to buy what you produce, I'll lend you the money. That is not really a clever scheme. I mean, that's a Ponzi scheme. I mean, if someone doesn't have $10 this year to buy something, how will he have $15 next year to pay you back with interest if his wages aren't going up? But they did that kind of lending because they had to. Profits were increasing. Rich people had more and more money, that is, investors. And the banks had to lend it. They were more desperate to lend than the people I saw were to borrow. And so we had this borrowing crisis. That's what it was. It happened to be in houses. It may be in student loans the next time, because people are not paid enough to buy back what they produce. And so all the people I saw, no, not everybody. I had a great variety of people, but many of the people I saw had to do a certain amount of borrowing more than they imagined they would, in order to just keep a family together in what they considered to be a decent life.
The way you break up the book is interesting. It is in three parts: our jobs, our homes, our savings. How did you come to that approach?
I had to put it somehow. Well, these were the three losses I saw. Interestingly, of course, the savings went back up. I don't talk to big, huge investors because they don't talk to me. The investors that I talk to are people who were frightened at the beginning of the recession that they would never see their savings rise again and their IRAs and so forth. Most of them did, because they stand as surrogates in my book for really big investors, all of whom who have, for the most part, seen their profits come back up. It just seemed like a way to divide up the people that I was meeting. It fit together. What can I tell you?
But again, it does. There are commonalities, and there are many. Even though everybody's story is different, there are concrete things that you can point to and say, okay, this is what happened.
Insecurity is the great one, because some of the people I speak to are this is a public radio station, are very much like your children. One of the first people I interviewed, because I'm timid at first about talking to total strangers, and then I get braver and braver, it was someone who said to me when she heard I was writing such a book, you know, my kids have so much student debt, and she was a stepmother. That makes you very sensitive. Oh, I just don't think they spend their money wisely, et cetera. She had that attitude of, you know, this younger generation, they're all yuppies. They eat out at places that, you know, I wouldn't go to. And when I looked at her children, this is the one case where I feel I really did some good, at least between her and her children. It wasn't just that they had student loans. They did what they were supposed to do. They had paid down half their student loans, as a matter of fact, because one of them worked in a boarding school at first and had no expenses. He paid down his loan so fast. But if you just added their student loans, then when they decided to move for a job, they both got teaching jobs in Minneapolis, they wanted to move, they found that the house they were living in, if they tried to sell it, they would still owe the bank $200,000. And yet they had bought the cheapest fixer-upper in their area, around the area of D.C. And when I just, this is just an ordinary couple. These are not like the people I talked to who were being put out of their house the next day and in dire situations. This was the most ordinary couple in the book. But when I added up their expenses, their necessary expenses for behaving the way young people were supposed to behave, investing in a house, a fixer-upper house, investing in themselves, going to school, trying to move for a job. Then for the first time, their stepmother, who was my friend, saw, oh my God, they're just living in such a different world than we were when we grew up. There really is no extra money. No wonder they have thrift store couches. It's not because they're eating out at fancy restaurants and buying yuppie food. And in that case, in that one case, I must say, at least I made a parent and a child understand each other. And they were both understood that it was, they both wanted, both the mother and the young couple wanted to have a baby. And they both understood for once that it was the bubble, that it was bubble birth control that was keeping them from having that grandchild. And that it really was a different economy for their children than I had grown up in and she had grown up in. So I did good with that book, that chapter anyway. I made two people understand each other.
You start off in the introduction of the book of saying, as I talked with people who've lost jobs, homes, and savings, I couldn't help wondering what shape they and the country will be in after we fully emerge from the downturn. I think there are enough clues in their individual histories for us to make some good guesses by the time we're finished. And we've certainly discussed much of that in the course of our conversation. But as we wrap up, the end of your book is a chapter entitled To Be Continued. So how many question marks are still out there?
None. None. The only question mark is, will we be able to reverse this trend of inequality?
That's a big one.
When I started, but that the trend is going on, I can't believe it. There's never been a recession where profits during the course of the recession increased by 25%. That's absolutely insane. Look, the kind of people I talk to, like the woman who was the biggest salesperson, earned the biggest commission in a chain of women's boutiques, which the flagship was on Madison Avenue. She still works there, so I'm not going to mention the name. During the course of the recession, okay, their hours were cut. And then their hours were cut in a way that they were told each week what hours they would work the next week. Okay, it's a recession. Then she said to me, but you notice the strange thing, they're still hiring people. What really happened was the company used the recession to change what their work staff would be like afterwards. They hired people who would from then on have no bonuses, no sales commissions, no holidays, no vacation pay, no health insurance. And finally, they called the old staff together and they said, this is the way it's going to be. If you want to quit, we won't contest your unemployment insurance. It was as if unemployment insurance became their final paycheck and they were allowed to leave. And the company now has young people. Young, I'm going to say young like it's an attack. It's just anybody who has to earn a family tries to find something better. Actually, they have people who are earning a family. So the job was changed in the course of the recession. The recession was used as an excuse to make another big swath of the population insecure, people who worked by the hour, who didn't know from week to week what they were going to get and had no benefits. And by the way, that's an economic problem, but it's also, as my friend said, very much of a social problem. She said, I don't expect this to be a family, but I expect it to be a team. But it's not a team anymore with, you know, people working for one term because it fits in with their college schedule and then leaving. So it's a The recession was used to further the direction we were going in before that makes us all so insecure.
The name of the book is Down the Up Escalator, How the 99% Live. The book is published by Anchor Books. Barbara Garson, thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thank you.
Great pleasure. Again, the title, Down the Up Escalator, published by Anchor Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.